Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 15 of HER, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, and her life. Today, we're going to be talking about, oh boy, the baby dilemma. Should we have one? Should we not? Basically, your reproductive decisions. And this episode, by the way, is made possible by our friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They're delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix customized for women. Trust me, you won't forget to take them because they taste so great. To learn more, please go to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And just a quick reminder to hop on over to iTunes after our episode to rate this podcast and review us. We really welcome your thoughts. All right, it's time for HER.
HER, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind.
Her body.
Her life.
It's all about HER.
Now on this episode, we're very excited to have Merle Bombardieri on with us to discuss, the baby dilemma. Should we? Should we not? What are we doing here already? Now, Merle is a clinical social worker psychotherapist who specializes in parenthood, decision-making, infertility, adoption, and making the most of a child-free life, huh? Although she's enjoyed raising her daughters, now grown, thank you, Lord, she has also been an advocate for child-free people since 1979. She's also the author of The Baby Decision, How to Make the Most Important Choice of Your Life. Merle, welcome to HER. We're so happy to have you on this podcast.
Well, Pam, I'm so honored to be with you. I love your book. I love your voice. I love your enthusiasm and inspiration. So I'm thrilled to be talking to you today.
Well, you know, the book is amazing. Why did you write this book? What was the incentive behind this?
Well, I was, at the time that I started writing this book, I was living in Nashville, Tennessee, which is a fairly conservative city, especially back in the 70s. And I was asked by the YWCA to do a one-day workshop on helping people decide whether or not to have children. And I spoke to many of my colleagues, and they were saying, you know, we have tons and tons of couples in our practices who are trying to make this decision, and we have no idea what to tell them. At the time, there was one book on the topic. It was called The Baby Maybe by Elizabeth Whalen. She was a public health expert, so she didn't understand. It was a well-written book with some interesting points, but she didn't understand all the psychology involved in deciding to have or not to have a child, how even though most people do decide to have children, how terrifying it is in many ways. It's such a big change. And as we know, children are wonderful, but they are also such a disruption. They totally turn lives upside down. So I realized that since Nashville is a conservative city, I realized if this many people are having trouble making this decision here in Nashville, how many more people must there be in New York and Boston and San Francisco? And that was the case. There had been nothing written on the topic. And the publisher that published the book, the first edition of the book, had just finished editing feminist economist Carolyn Bird's book called The Two-Paycheck Marriage. And she says, at the end of her book, she says, they're books that tell you everything about living a woman's life, having a career, but there's no book that helps you decide whether or not to have a child. So my editor and the owner of that publishing company had just read that when my proposal came in. So I realized that there was a great need for people to be able to look inside and really get in touch with their emotions. You know, and the funny thing was, in the magazine articles in that first book that came out, all the surveys were, would you rather change diapers, dirty diapers at 2 a.m., or would you rather be in the Bahamas? Well, those questions are ridiculous. Even people who are very happy as parents, if asked that choice, are going to say, I'd rather be lying in the, you know, in the sun with my husband rather than changing diapers at 2 a.m. So people really needed something that helped them get in touch with what appealed to them about having children and what their sense of loss would be about that.
Well, I really think that this book is really seminal and incredibly important. And because this entire, topic is so absolutely important, especially nowadays, there's never really been a guidebook, number one, to help someone actually go through the thinking process on all of this. The second thing is that, I think that people who have been child free or childless, however you want to look at that, have been, kind of quiet and somewhat embarrassed, and maybe they don't want to talk about it, and have been, put in a position many times, not all the time, but many times, of feeling as though they should feel unfulfilled because they never had children.
Right.
And I think, does that make sense to you, Merle?
Well, it's really interesting because I think this is an example of what social scientists call pronatalism, the idea that everybody needs to have children and that people aren't real adults or they haven't completed a wonderful life if they never have a child. And what's so interesting is everyone who becomes a parent gives up something. They may have wanted to be a novelist, they might have wanted to be an opera singer, they might have wanted to be a PhD tenured scientist, and they become a lab tech instead. But what's so interesting is that all of the research shows that people who are child-free have very fulfilling lives. They do really important things. That stereotype that they're selfish and immature is simply not borne out by any of my experience in working in this field in 30 years or in any of the research. In fact, a lot of people who decide to be child-free are either working with their psychologists who are working with really, really, really disturbed children or adults, or founding organizations, even global health organizations, or their physicians who work with the very, very sickest patients. So rather than being people who are just, living selfish lives, lying in the sun and eating chocolate, they are doing services to our society, which if they had a child and they needed to take care of their child, they would have to give up what they're doing. So there's a lot.
Isn't that interesting?
There's a lot of misunderstanding.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking about something as you were saying that. I remember the first time I did the Oprah Winfrey Show, and that was a number of years ago. And we were right about that time. There was a lot of interesting press about the fact that Oprah's clock was ticking out in terms of pregnancy, children.
Right.
I think all of us remember when that was going on, and headlines in Chicago, where she lives, where what's she up to with Stedman? Let's get this show on the road, and why is she waiting so long? Dear God, she's 40. This kind of a thing, and. I remember when we were shooting the show, I was the second show being shot that day. She was doing three. She was talking about this issue. She said, oh, dear God. She looked at another headline. She said, they're, nailing me with this again. And I looked at her and I said, can you come over here for a minute? And she did. And I said, look into that camera. And she thought I'd lost my mind, of course. And I said, just look into the camera. And she says, okay, I'm looking at the camera. I said, you have children, millions of them.
Beautiful.
You're nurturing all of these people. And so you don't have to, go through the whole biologic whatever. You're already, as it were, mothering, full generations here with all the work that you're doing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, she smiled at me and she said, oh, my God, I get it. She's running around so much on the gerbil wheel of career that she never took a moment to realize, wait a minute, there are so many people out there who, for all intent and purposes, she's helping guide, advise, et cetera, very much the way a mother would do. So there's a lot of different kind of, as it were, mothering going on out there. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. No, it does. It does make sense.
All right. So now, in your book, all right, you really delve into this. You say there are different reasons for being, as child-free, for instance, that this is a conscious choice, trying for a baby but having fertility or miscarriage problems, being married to someone who doesn't want kids. You know, what is, there are a lot of reasons here, right?
Yes.
And so why is it then so important to make a conscious decision with all of this stuff going on?
Okay, well, the important thing is that people who don't make conscious decisions about parenting wind up feeling grouchy and disappointed and saying, well, my life would have been better if I had had a child, or my life would have been better if I hadn't had a child. What decision-making does is it makes people realize, first of all, our lives are very important to us, and we're not going to live forever. And the most fun thing that I discovered when I was researching the book is that the word decide comes from a Latin root meaning to cut away from. And what that means is that every decision involves loss. If you decide to have a child, you're going to have all those pleasures of the cuddles and the Christmas tree and the graduation and grandchildren and shopping and together and all those things, but you're losing a lot of freedom, a lot of quiet, a lot of couple time. Your couple relationship is going to be more of a challenge when there is so much money and time going into a child.
Right.
And if you decide to be child-free, well, you are having a lot more control over your life. You don't have to worry that you'll have a difficult child or a sick child or that becoming parents will ruin your relationship, but you are letting go of what is it like to see what a child or two children that are a combination of your own genes and the genes of the person that you love would be like together. You know, you're not going to hear someone say mommy or daddy. You are not going to have some of those same experiences of teaching and offering lessons and courage. And even though you can do that as a big brother or a big sister or an aunt, you're giving up the kind of whole family life sharing a home together. So whatever you decide, you're losing something. So the decision shouldn't be which decision will I regret. The decision should be which decision will I and we regret least. And if you understand that and make a conscious decision, then you feel like you're in control of your life and you enjoy your life. If you had a child because you thought everybody was supposed to do that, on the bad days when you're newborn is screaming, you're going to say, how did I get myself into this? You know, and if you had the baby because your husband and your parents wanted you to have the child, then, you know, you can feel angry. And even though you may fall in love with the child and really enjoy parenting, you're starting out with, this isn't really my choice. You're not in it with both feet. And the same thing with child-free. If you never make a conscious decision, if you just drift in that direction, then you've never really taken the time to sit down with your partner and say, if we're not going to have children, what do we want to do with the time and the money? How do we want to honor our relationship since we have this chance to be together so deeply and wonderfully in ways that parents don't get to? So we get to feel more like we're in control of our lives and we get to have more fun. And
some people are still stuck. But yes. Some people are still stuck, though, Merle.
Yes.
You know, they're what you call in your book the 50-50 people.
Right.
You know, what if they're like 50-50? So you have these things called secret door exercises.
Yes.
How do they help? Can you just give us an example?
Sure. I'll give you a couple of examples. So people, one of the biggest problems that people have when they're trying to decide whether or not to have a child is they think that they're completely up in the air. They think they have no leaning at all and that they're getting nowhere. And actually, it turns out that very often they're 60-40, but they don't really realize that's a decision. So instead of realizing that they're starting to go in one direction, they're really tearing their hair out or being angry at their spouse saying, we're never going to get anywhere. We might as well just have a, you know, hit a dartboard. So these exercises help people get in touch with how they really feel about children. For instance, I have one called Photo Album, and I have people picture things like a wailing red-faced newborn, a peacefully nursing three-month-old baby, a toddler in a supermarket rolling on the floor kicking and screaming, an 11-year-old girl winning a blue ribbon for exhibit at the science fair. And these kind of visualizations help people get in touch with what appeals to them and doesn't appeal to them about having children. And when they do a bunch of these exercises, they begin to see that they actually do find a lot of things appealing about a child, or they don't find things so appealing about a child, and that's very helpful. And my favorite exercise is a chair exercise. In a chair exercise, I have the person sit in one chair and speak for the voice that says, I'm going to be child-free forever. I love my career. I love traveling with my partner. I can't imagine dealing with the noise and the dirt and the chaos. I love having an orderly house. I'm not going to have a child, and that's it. And then they go sit in the other chair, and they speak for the part of themselves that says, I can't believe you're saying this. You know, you dream about being pregnant, carrying your husband's child. You look forward to taking your daughter shopping. You, you love teaching values to other people. You spend so much time with your nieces and nephews. How can you say that? And literally, I have them go back and forth from chair to chair, having an argument with themselves. And what's fascinating is, even though they think they're 50-50, one voice turns out to be stronger. The voice is louder. The voice is more confident. The body posture is different in the chair. One chair sitting up straight and being very dynamic and moving hands and eyes that are bright and confident. And in the other chair, starting to kind of slink and slither and not quite be able to argue as strongly as they thought. And what's really interesting and fun is if they do that, whether they do it at home or in my office, and then they do it a couple of weeks later, then the voice might be even stronger telling them what the decision is. So we have a lot of information about our feelings about children and about child-free, and when we just try to be intellectual about it, we can't tap into them. And that's really why I wrote the
book. I love it. Well, the reason why I love this is because it's just fantastic to finally have a resource for people. You know, this is something so few people really consciously think about.
Right.
They do is they, you know, they're swayed by their peers. Their best friend just had a baby. Obviously, you must have one. Well, maybe not. Maybe it doesn't work for you and your partner, whatever. I think people just sort of go along with it all and don't really sit down and think about it. But there's something else too. And that is, don't you think that there's a very strong influence on how you were raised? If you had a fantastic mother-father kind of a parental situation where you saw love and you saw so much value for having family, you know, a family with the kids and all the rest of it, versus maybe not so much, right? Maybe it was much more shattered and problematic. Don't you think that sways a lot of this feeling too?
Well, Pam, it's a really fascinating question. It's true that a lot of people who have great childhoods want to replicate that with their own family. But it's also true that a lot of people who've had terrible childhoods really look forward to and savor parenting and being able to nurture their child in a way that
Excellent.
They never were in a loving relationship.
There's your point right
and
there. And that's also what I've seen. Yes.
Yeah. And it's fascinating how many people who choose to be child-free had great childhoods. And their parents can be confused and say, well, if you're deciding to be child-free, does that mean that we did a bad job? And it's so interesting because they wind up telling their parents, remember when I did that science fair and I gave up the cheerleading or whatever, and you said, do what you believe in. Don't do what you think makes you more popular. They actually give their parents examples of where they were really listened to and encouraged to make their own choices and put their heart and soul into things that matter to them. And that can lead to being so committed to science or art or architecture or environmental causes that makes them hesitate to have their own children, but they become very involved with nieces and nephews and friends of children and so on. So yes, it is true. There are some people who choose to be child-free because they had difficult childhoods and they, don't have happy associations with parenthood. But it's much more common for child-free people to have had a good childhood and have other values and life experiences. Or they could be married to someone who adamantly doesn't want to have a child, and they're honoring that. Or they tried to have a child and went through infertility.
So, you know, it's interesting. In my practice, I remember one particular incredibly highly achieved woman who was child-free. And in talking about that and knowing her history, she was actually the victim of fairly severe physical abuse as a mm-hmm. child. And as such, there were fears for her. Mm-hmm. Number one, she certainly did not have a happy childhood by any means.
Right.
But number two, she'd done enough reading to realize, you know, child abuse is a gift that keeps on giving. Mm-hmm. And that is that many people who are not enlightened, right, continue the same terrible, you know, situation, because that's really, frankly, all they ever knew. And these people still have trauma behavior. So she just basically said, you know, I can't trust myself with that. I'm now at a much later time in my life getting therapy and really reframing, you know, the trauma that took place. Mm-hmm. And she said, you know, I've never once felt a strong urge to mm-hmm. have children at all. I mm-hmm. always thought that was weird. But now I really feel very good about everything. I'm at peace with it. So doesn't it seem like every single person has their individual story, journey, and it's about telling your true truth and sitting with your feelings, right?
That's so beautifully said. I love the way you said that. And it's why I love doing this work, because people, it isn't just child or no child. It's who am I? What matters most to me? How do I want to spend my time? Who are the people that I love? And what hasn't happened yet in my life that I want to make sure happens before my life ends? And for a lot of people who have dealt with abuse, they never got to have a childhood. So now, as healed adults, they can be very playful, you know, on vacations and with sports and with puppies and kittens and so they can kind of have a reverse life where they had to be grown up when they were young, and they get to have less responsibility and more fun now.
Mm-hmm.
But you really hit the nail on the head.
I just honestly think that everyone's got an individual experience here, and I think that each person by themselves, without the partner sitting there, needs to have a conversation with themselves and not be doing things. You know, women get an F- in really listening to themselves, and instead they're people pleasers. Well, they're people pleasers. They may not want a child, and yet they do it because parents want a grandchild, because their partner wants, you know, a child. It goes on and on.
Right.
So I think, again, just taking a moment and maybe getting some help. I think your book would be a very wonderful first step, Merle, in people beginning to know what the actual questions are that they need to ask themselves. It's important. Now, let's go to a different little piece here. What about the issue of the one child family, you know, making that decision? Why is it so popular currently?
Okay, well, there are a number of reasons. One is the cost of living. It is just so hard to raise even one child and pay for childcare now. So that is one reason. And a lot of people are insecure about whether they're still going to have their jobs and can count on them. Another reason is for couples who are very involved in their careers, the second child is often the straw that breaks the camel's back. And if they have one child, they can actually enjoy their careers and enjoy their child. So they often describe it as the best of both worlds, because they get to experience the pleasures of parenthood without all the difficulties of sibling rivalry. And if you have just one child, by the time they're about three, they become very portable, and you can take them to a lot of events, a lot of parties and restaurants and traveling, and you don't get cemented into that. Of course, many women love being home and love having a house full of children. But for couples who are very involved in their careers and like to do, you know, a lot of sports and theater and travel and so on, having one child and not being so tied down to the home can be really great. And there's another thing that is becoming really, really prominent in people's minds now, and I'm actually even working on a blog post about that, and that is the concern for the environment. If everyone mm-hmm. has two or more children, our environment is really in trouble. In fact, some environmentalists are saying that nobody should have children now. And
I actually read that. Well, I read that too, but it's about leaving that print, that imprint, you know, on our environment. And Lord knows we have an overpopulated world as it is. But really, at the end of the day, what you've really helped us understand here, Merle, is how to sit down for a moment and really ask the right questions, tell your truth, spend some real conscious time making that decision. Yourself, with your partner, however you're doing that, and then to stay truthful with that all the way through, messaging it to your friends, whether you're going to be child-free, whether you're going to have one kid or five kids or however you're going to play this. This is a very, very important decision, and it should not be, you know, just sort of slacked off and not really given its due in terms of thinking it all through. I can't thank you enough, Merle, for being on our podcast, because this is such a pivotal question and a milestone in most couples' lives. So once again, we've been talking to Merle Bombardieri, and she is the author of The Baby Decision, How to Make the Most Important Choice of Your Life. Her website is thebabydecision.com. And our topic on the overall has been the baby dilemma, all about your reproductive decisions. Merle, thanks for being on Her. Well, everyone, welcome to, and remember, you want to catch every episode of Her. Hit subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com. And please take 30 seconds and rate this podcast on iTunes. Why? Because we want to attract more people just like you to the show. And that happens when you take the time to rate it. While you're at it, can you please leave a review as well? Just remember, I read those things, so does my mother. We're very sensitive people, you know. I'm Dr. Pam Peek. Hey, follow me on Twitter at PamPeekMD. And you can also catch all of our past episodes on the Her Show on RadioMD.com. Hey, thanks for listening, and please stay well.